Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
The Lochte story just gets more and more intriguing, and I think everybody will want this to go away. I think everybody wants it to go away, except for the State Department that released the thing about the $400 million on the prisoner exchange. The timing couldn't be better on that. Again, we're not all stupid, you know. How about that? I think it's a good time to release that. Because all we're going to do is talk about Lochte for the next 24 hours. Okay, so have you seen the tape?
I've seen some video photos of the shots at the gas station.
I've seen some of the tape. And this happens around 6, and this lasts for about 20 minutes or so. All right. But there's one point where one of them is on the ground, hands up. That's because they have a gun being pointed at them, and I think it might be Lochte. It's a little distant. Lochte told TMZ it's that 3-minute span that he says changes a lot of things. Again, my question is, okay, I think it's pretty universal that they paid restitution for damage. But was there any other cash exchange there? And if it is, that is massively embarrassing, because this is an off-duty police officer, by the way, who's the security guard. So, this is squirrely all the way around. Now, I think the best thing that could happen to these guys, and all across the board, including the Brazilian police and the security guards, is for the gas station owner to not press charges, which evidently the indication is he's not going to, because he got restitution. He just wants to clear it up. Whoo, boy. So, it's crazy. The whole thing's crazy. Now, if there's no monetary exchange with the security guard, then, I mean, it's completely bogus. But if there's anything where they're like, here's $20. Because you notice how the dollar amounts were discussed, $31.20. Well, what did the $31 go for? What's the $20 for? Was it all the same thing? But that's how they did it. All right, Neil Coulong in a moment. First, the play-by-play call of the day. The Cubs getting it done again. Here's Pat Hughes.
Soler cracks one in the air. Deep left center. It's got a chance. It's gone. Jorge Soler. Cubs lead 5-0. It almost and may have hit the bottom of the brand new video board out in left center. What a smash.
The Cub beat goes on. Jose Soler with a home run. Pat Hughes with the call on the score. WSCR last night. All right, Neil Coulong. Neil, it's always great to hear you on the other end.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
James Harrison. Interesting story on the timeline between the current commissioner and the current defensive player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. What are some of the enlightening highlights of the timeline?
I think what was interesting in putting it together was it's a collection of information that I think Steelers fans will all remember, but having it all laid out in the manner in which we did it was enlightening, just to see how all of it kind of played together. You had, you know, the initial kind of connection between Goodell and Harrison, of course, is the five fines that he picked up for close to $200,000 between 2010 and 2011. From there, there's a bit of a lull for Harrison as he kind of bounced between the Bengals and the Steelers and, you know, really didn't pick up a fine. But after that, it's how it all came back together with Goodell after, in my opinion anyway, based on my research, a gross mishandling of the Ray Rice incident combined with kind of shoddy investigative practices in the Tom Brady Deflategate situation. Putting all of that together, it kind of seems to me that the NFL has something of an agenda in how they're going to handle investigations. They have to be as thorough as possible. And then you bring the union into all of it in that really there's no tangible reason why the union should trust Goodell, especially with the power and the control that he has. And at the forefront of it all is James Harrison, the one guy who's publicly spoken the most viciously about Goodell in the past. To have him be the guy standing in the way, really, of Goodell being able to close the book on an investigation, which is something he's failed to do a couple times in the past already, and he's gotten burned for it. And all of this being Harrison's final year, I mean, it almost seems like a Sons of Anarchy episode. That's what I was thinking. Just the logic and the rational thing to do can't be done because of things that have happened in the past. And it's both infuriating yet perfectly sensible. You really don't get a good idea of how this is going to end.
You don't. I agree, by the way, at all points about how Rice was handled, how Brady was handled, and now we get to this. So, Neil, but here's the part that I'm confused about. Al Jazeera writes this report, okay? But it's a report about something that players are tested randomly for. If you're passing all the tests, why do you need to investigate it?
Part of the reasoning for wanting to do the piece, and I'll use this as a disclaimer that I am not a producer of the show, and I probably wouldn't have dipped into that kind of investigation myself. But their reasoning is to suggest how easy it is to locate it. Now, testing is another matter. There are certain strands of HGH that are said to be undetectable, or at the very least the technology has not caught up yet to be able to identify clearly what it is that players are taking. And that's kind of what is implied in the report. It's this kind of designer HGH, Delta 2 it's called, that was allegedly being supplied to the players. So the idea is you can beat tests by using this stuff. Come buy my product and you can get all the alleged benefits from HGH and not get caught for it. And there's certainly, I think the aftermath over the steroid scandal in baseball from 2 decades ago still resonates with fans today in that they feel players can easily get away with this. And that there are players who have come out and said that, they know a lot of people that do it. However it is they're getting away with it, we're not entirely sure. But your point is a very good one, because none of the four players that are being mentioned within this report, five if you include Peyton Manning, have tested positive for anything, ever. And with the amount of random tests that James Harrison has gotten, you'd think they would have found something by now if they were capable of doing it. So it certainly doesn't, it doesn't remove guilt, or suspicion, I should say, from a lot of the minds of a lot of fans. But in the end, this is what they're testing for. This is what they agreed to do, and he hasn't tested positive. So, yeah, I agree in that sense. What's the point? From the NFL's perspective, if you have an issue with it, if you want to know, just go to the test results. And you've given him at least four that I could track down, and that may not even be the right number, but at least four since February or the time after that report broke. So you would have caught him if you were going to, in my opinion.
And again, people have to realize that, A, they're random. And, I mean, they literally can walk up to you anytime and say, hey, time's now. Number two, a masking agent is considered a positive test. And skipping it, as Le'Veon Bell has pointed out to all of us, is also a positive test. He's passed all of them. Why bother talking to him?
That's kind of ironic, isn't it? I mean, James Harrison is facing a suspension for taking all of the tests that he gets, while the Steelers have two of them that are looking at least a 4-game suspension for skipping those tests. So, Steelers hopefully get it together at some point. But as far as Harrison goes, everything with the exception of having to formally acknowledge to the NFL that there is even a shred of credibility to a report in which the source of it has already recanted. In fact, he did it not even 48 hours after the report came out. The NFL has already cleared Peyton Manning of the same exact allegations that were made in the report, there really is absolutely no reason to think that any of those four players have any link to this guy, and that there's every reason to believe that he simply made the whole thing up in an effort to generate sales. So, you know, I don't think there's anything there except everything that Roger Goodell has done in the past. That's exactly the problem. This is something that, that's so fundamental and so basic. The only reason that there is resistance to it is because the way that, you know, the manner in which Goodell has screwed up past investigations, flat out lied about the results of some investigations, the NFLPA has absolutely no reason to trust him. So it really comes down to principle. And in that regard, you almost can't blame him. I mean, I think it's ridiculous that it's gotten to this point, but I can totally see why it has.
Now, the next part, why is it wrong for Goodell to not just go over to Latrobe himself, flying to Arnold Palmer Airport there and say, hey, let's just sit down, you and me, face to face. We'll get, you know, and I'll ask you a couple questions, get a feel for what's going on here, and then we'll move on instead of trying to do the grandiose thing and make you go to New York.
I think that would probably be wrapped up in it, kind of a combination of not wanting to meet them 60-40. Clearly, throughout his tenure as commissioner of the NFL, he's had the desire to establish himself as being firmly in control of everything that's going on. I don't think he is interested in meeting the players on a collective bargain issue, you know, any less than what he's required to. Right. It gets sketchy on whether or not in this particular case they do have some kind of ground to say, even though we have essentially acknowledged that no credible evidence exists here, we can still investigate you whenever we want. I think he's more interested in maintaining his ground, maintaining his control over the situation to say, you have to do what I tell you to do. The CBA says so. And by the way, I just got the whole Brady thing it reinstated. So you better not mess with me on this, because right. If you take it to court, you're going to lose. Right. And I agree with that. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. But for him to try to rectify the issue and really try to solve what this really is about should be in his best interest as well as the player's best interest. But that, again, goes to the trust factor that the NFLPA doesn't have. I don't think, you know, simply put, I don't think Goodell is willing to do that. And he right. doesn't care if they get suspended. He wants to make sure the public and the senators who got after him after the Ray Rice issue are cognizant of the fact that he is conducting an investigation, he is thoroughly examining it, and he is going to close it when he is done. If not, you're not going to play. I see why he wants to do that, but that's a real dangerous scenario for everybody, I think.
To me, that was the biggest offshoot of the Brady thing. The biggest offshoot to me is I felt it emboldened his office to do even more.
Yep, you're exactly right. That's exactly what it was. It's not a coincidence that the message was sent to the four players who were not cooperating, that here's your deadline. You have by this date, this is what you're facing. If you fail to comply, the ball's in your court, because that's exactly what got the Brady suspension overturned in the first place. It was the fact the NFL didn't provide what Judge Richard Brenner determined to be enough time to kind of weigh the suspension that was over their heads. And frankly, I was shocked with a four-game suspension for what Brady was accused of, for what the Patriots were accused of. It's a lot easier, as the NFL has learned, to get away with those things if they provide proper notice of what the alleged defendant is facing. That's exactly what they just did with these players. They even gave a length of suspension. It's indefinite. In other words, you're not going back until I tell you so, tell you you're allowed to do it if you don't comply. So the ball is in your court, and just based on just the recent court ruling with Brady, the NFL has every reason to believe what they're doing is going to be supported.
And remember the key words in the Brady case: it's more probable than not. In other words, it's a guess. So, and that's what it is. It's a guess. More probable than not is a guess. Now, tonight the Eagles will take on the Steelers. Just a quick thumbnail. What are you going to watch for tonight?
I think that the Steelers running back situation is kind of still up in the air. I liked a little bit of what I saw with Darrell Richardson. I understand he's you know, at best the third running back, but you can't ignore the fact that the Steelers running backs have consistently been injured over the last couple of years, especially later in the season. They're going to have a guy who's ready to go, who's prepared each and every week. So I think he's a key player. And, you know, just based on everything we just talked about, it seems like there's a, you know, this is the wrong word, but, you know, more probable than not chance that the Steelers have a little bit of an issue in regards to depth at the outside linebacker position. So you want to look at a guy like Brian Ciccolo. I keep calling him Brian. You know, that's terrible of me to do. I do it all the time. Yeah. Anthony Ciccolo, right. The second-year guy out of Miami, not the former Bears running back. But you want to get a feel of whether he can play hurt. He had a little bit of an ankle issue in the loss to Detroit. Can you get him out there and expect meaningful snaps from him? Is he conditioned enough to play with the injury in between practices and then get in two games and play significant, a large amount of time? Those are key questions in my mind, and really that's really all this is about. I mean, if Landry Jones is starting, Steelers fans probably aren't all that excited to watch it, and that's probably what we're going to have tonight.
Well, this is terrific, Neil. Thanks so much. Appreciate your perspective as always.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Well, there are bigger, more important stories in the world today, such as a confirmation of ransom being paid to Iran, the awful, devastating flooding in Louisiana, deaths there. But the one people are talking about is an incident at 6 o'clock in the morning in Rio de Janeiro with Ryan Lochte. It may not be the most important story out there, but it's the most talked about story by a wide margin. He has been portrayed as a liar in all of this. Yet, if you listen to the press conference, in which they went after him pretty good. I mean, they really did. They went after the swimmers really hard in this. But there is one part in it that is kind of opens the door a little bit here, that maybe the version that Lochte and the swimmers told isn't completely out of the realm. And that's the part where not one but two security guards did draw their guns. And there is absolutely a monetary exchange that takes place with the general manager for restitution, evidently. But there's also a second one that takes place, and there's no word on who it takes place with. Was it with the security guards? Was it like a little extortion payment to make it go away? Like, leave us alone, put your guns down, here's some cash. Lochte is telling TMZ, which actually is a far more reputable organization than Al Jazeera, that there's 3 minutes in there that are critical to this whole thing. And, I mean, I'd like to know what those 3 minutes are. I mean, right now his credibility is pretty well, it has been shot up pretty good. But, like I said, there's this hole in there. And everything is against the swimmer's story the entire time, the entire press conference. You know, look, they weren't robbed. You know, this didn't happen. They knocked down a door. They broke mirrors. I think, did they break a sink? Sean, is a sink, mirrors, or no sink? But they caused damage.
They did.
After they knocked the door down. So they caused damage. There's no question about that. So that's way out of the realm of what the original story was. But then, to me, the whole thing takes a quick turn when, wait a minute, they drew guns on them. And they were in uniform. And one is an off-duty police officer. Okay. And money does exchange hands. Did all the money go to the general manager of the gas station? That's a huge question in this. Huge. Let's just say for argument's sake, only for argument's sake, because obviously we don't know any of the facts. We're all trying to find out the facts like everybody else. But say they did give a little, like, kickback to, like, hey. Say the officer or the security guard demanded, hey, you want this to go away? Pay up. Now what does this tell you about their version of the story? I'm just saying, that's just something to at least
lay out. Now, maybe none of that happened and all the money went to the general manager of the gas station. If all the money went to the general manager of the gas station, then forget it. But there is a hole in the police version of the story. So there are all sochts of holes in the Lochte story, but there's also a hole in the police version of the story. I feel like we're at Dunkin' Donuts. Lots of holes everywhere.
Where ceilings grow. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf. Sports bozo of the day. This is just... I guess we'll start with Lochte. Then we'll go to the swimmers. And then I want to go to the security guards. I mean, I know Lochte's the most... Now, Lochte, evidently, according to the way, is the far most vocal by a wide margin of all the guys there. But what happened on the monetary exchange? Did it all go to the manager of the store as restitution? Or did one of the guys with the guns get any? That's a big question. Because it does change your perception of the whole thing if the latter happened. Now, maybe that didn't happen at all. Maybe it all went to the manager. I'm just saying it's a legitimate question that does need to be asked and answered. Fair enough? Now, this is, obviously, an incident with international repercussions. It is at the Olympics. It's at Rio. Using the problems of Rio to try and use it to your advantage, which is obviously what they tried to do. And it is internationally embarrassing. But there's a reality. It's not the biggest story of the day in terms of reality. Now, in terms of interest, it is the single most interesting story of the day. Without a doubt. It'll trend big on social media. It's going to lead newscasts and so forth. But there are two other stories right away, right off the top, that are exponentially more important and significant than the Lochte story. I mean, not even close. I mean, the flooding in Louisiana is, I mean, you've got 40,000 people out of their homes. You have at least a dozen, almost 20 people dead.
Another few locations last night had another 3.5 inches of rain. It's like, where can it go? I mean, where else can it go?
It's an exponentially bigger story. It's affecting 40,000 people. And then, of course, the story that, you know, I'm not here to do news and commentary, but let's face it, when there's a video that admits there's ransom for Americans taken, that's not good. I mean, this story's a blip. This is four drunk guys at 6 o'clock in the morning kicking in a gas station door and wrecking some stuff inside. Then having security guards surround them, pull guns, and then giving some cash as restitution, then who knows what up, and then made up a story about being robbed. Okay, so let's put them all together now. Okay, which one of the three is the most important story of the day? And two of them you can't go wrong on. You can pick one or the other. But it's obvious what number three is. I mean, it's obvious by a wide margin that the Lochte story would be the third most important story. It's, while being embarrassing and involving a big name, it's relatively insignificant compared to the other two. But this will be what trends on social media. This will be what people are talking about. This will lead the news. This will have commentary on it, the whole thing. It's by far the most interesting. It weaves a tangled web. And it seems to weave a tangled web, not just in one direction now, but potentially in another direction. So it certainly has the intrigue to it. and it involves a big name, and it involves lying and accusation and so forth. But of the three stories I just named, it is the single most insignificant story of the day. It's exponentially insignificant compared to the other two stories. Exponentially insignificant. So, one story potentially, one story involves natural disaster, displacement, lives lost, disaster. Another story endangers every American in the Middle East. But this will be what we'll talk about. Now, for us, it's a sports story, in part because it involves the United States Olympic swimmers, four of them. Okay, so on sports, yeah, we talk about it. No question. But it's going to be interesting. You watch the next 24, 48 hours. It's going to be all this, all this, all this, all this. And the other stuff, which is actually really important. I mean, like, really important. Okay? Remember, what's the restitution that's paid here? What was the total in American money? $51. Okay? It's not even the same ballpark with the other two stories, but it's going to be the story that everybody talks about, because everybody's intrigued by it. It's not the most important, but it's the most intriguing. It's got that soap opera feel to it. Am I wrong about that? I mean,
no, not at all. I mean, it's just, there's so many onions on that layer to peel back. I mean, it's just a fluid situation. Just wonder what direction it's going to go next.
I mean, it's an intriguing soap opera. And obviously, there, you know, let's face it. I mean, it's completely different than what it was told originally. Now, even when the police go after him really good in the press conference, they do give out a critical detail that doesn't exactly make them look great. And it's the most intriguing by a wide margin. It'll trend higher in social media. But again, in terms of actual human significance, and actually in terms of the big story, you know, I mentioned three stories. It's like it's a blip, you know, in reality, in terms of tragedy or bad move compared to the other two stories.
Well, here we were less than 48 hours ago. We're kind of thinking to ourselves, wow, what would have happened if all four of those guys were killed? I'm thinking, right, man, almost, you know, that's a complete 180. You go from literally almost feeling bad for Ryan Lochte to that bulb's not really fully lit upstairs.
But, right, well, again, he doesn't conduct himself well at all. He's said to be the other three swimmers say he's the most vocal, the most upset, the whole deal. But that part, that remember the story yesterday, no guns were pulled. Au contraire, guns were pulled by not one but two. And then what happened? Okay. Donnie Collins joins us. Donnie from the Scranton Times Tribune. Granny, Donnie, what is your take so far on what was seen on Penn State football 2 weeks from the opening kickoff?
I think the feel I have is that the offense is been the big story for 9 months now, and it's going to be, you know, come September 3rd, and you know, how is it coming along? And I think it's been okay. I think they kind of, I don't want to say lucked out. I think they kind of planned well here. They've got an offense where you know it's new, but it's not something totally off the wall. It's not something, you know, it's that the other people don't do, but it is something that will suit what these guys do best. And I think you know, we've seen that a little bit. You know the receivers, Barkley, those guys are all, we're all going to fit right in. Jasicki, I think he's a great candidate for a bounce back year. So I think this, you know, it'll help the offensive line. I think all that stuff is right. Depends on who the quarterback's going to be, but you know, I think that. But my feel for this team right now is that the offense will be better. And at the end of the day, I think that's where Penn State fans really want it to be, is better than it's been. You know, to see some kind of improvement and just, you know, kind of step into the future and you know, looking toward 2018 even a little bit, with some hope that things are going to be better than they've been. Defensively, I think everyone knows there's going to be some work to do, and that has shown at times during camp. But right now, I think all the focus is going to be on the offense, probably all season. The defense has earned some patience. Offense has to show it, though.
You mentioned the quarterbacks during that answer. Based on how they run this thing, in reality, how important is it to have two guys that can run it?
Yeah, I think it's huge. And that's one thing. You talk about these quarterback controversies, I guess. I don't know if there's very much of a controversy here, but they're always a pleasant dilemma because you want to be able to say, hey, if the first guy gets hurt, which is always a possibility, you can go to the second guy. And honestly, I think there's a lot of similarities between Stevens and McSorley. They don't look the same. I mean, Stevens looks more like a pro-style quarterback, but he can really run. He makes plays on the move. That's the sort of stuff McSorley does. What I think McSorley has, and I don't know yet about Stevens, is does he have that grit when it's, when you're down in the bowl game and you have to come back and get a couple of quick scores, could you do it? I know McSorley could do that. I don't know if Stevens could do that, but that might come with playing. So let's see. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if something would happen to McSorley, I don't think Penn State's going to have a huge drop-off if they have to put Tom Stevens.
Right. How excited are you to watch and observe Barkley in this offense?
I've never seen a sophomore player as hyped as Barkley is at Penn State. And rightfully so. I mean, you watch him last year; he did some amazing things. He jumps over the defensive back, runs over a guy. He could do it all. He's got to show that he could stay healthy. He's got to show that he's an every down back. I think he's got some work to do in the receiving game. But that said, he's got all the tools, and everybody loves him. And I think that he's an impressive guy too. A super impressive kid. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about wanting to see what he can do. And just from all the hype he's been getting, you would think that he's one of the five best running backs in college football. But you know, who wouldn't want to see that? But I think what I'm most excited to see with him is if he can answer all the questions I have. And I want to see if he can stay healthy, if he can stay on the field, if he could really be an every down back for 12 games. And then heading to the bowl game. We haven't seen that. It's not his fault. We haven't seen that. But yeah, if he could do that, he's got a chance to be one of the great running backs in the country.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you make about that because when you look at now, you mentioned Gesicki. Gesicki is the kind of guy where you want to see. You always hear. You play the way you practice. Well, he does practice extremely well, and if that comes to fruition, what would that mean to the growth of the offense?
Well, yeah, I think that's the one position where he's the only option. And to me, I mean, you could argue Bowers or Holland or the freshman kid or whatever they have, but he's the only guy who's played, and he's not some guy they found off the streets either. He's a guy everybody right. wanted. He's a guy who's He's athletic. I mean, there's a reason you get to drop a lot of passes because you're always open.
Right.
So, they kept giving Gesicki his chances last year. He didn't come through on most of them. But he's a guy who can make big plays. He's a guy who I think now, having talked to him, he's a guy who I think wants to be better. He's a guy who knows what it takes. And if he's a better version of what they had last year, then it makes that's totally different for the offense. He's a guy who can stretch the field up the middle. He makes Deshaun Hamilton in the slot a better receiver. If he's going to be open in the middle and he's going to be catching passes and he's going to be causing problems for defenses. So I think he's a tremendously important player. And part of me thinks he can't be worse than he was last year. An athlete like that always. He always bet on a guy like that to turn it around, but more of me thinks he's way better than he showed. He's a guy who I think is I don't even think it's a fair bet to say that he's going to turn around this year. I think he's going to have a big year.
All right. You talked about the defense. what do you think a Nyheim Wortman White can mean to stabilizing the defense?
He's a big X factor this year. I mean, if he could stay on the field, which, again, I mean, I talk about Barkley, not, you know, he's got to show it. Well, Nyheim's got to show it, too, and Nyheim has not. That's the only knock I have on Nyheim's game, is that he hasn't stayed on the field. And when he does, he's an elite player. But I think having him back this year, if he could stay healthy on the field, it just gives you that second voice. Really a third voice, because Brandon Bell, I think, is underrated in that regard. But, you know, Kabinda came in last year, and I think really, you know, in really tough circumstances, grabbed that middle linebacker spot and ran with it. And, you know, he does look like the future at that position. But in this defense, those two spots, the Will and the Mike, you know, Bob Shoup always used to say, they're about the same position. I mean, the Mike's got to take command and call it the coverages, but the Will does a lot of the same thing. And to have two players the caliber of Kabinda out there, and Wortman, if he can knock some of the rust off, get the feeling back, get in a groove, I think he could be a guy who could lead this team in tackles very easily. But that said, he's got to knock the rust off, and he's got Jake Cooper knocking on the door.
What can an effective punting game, I'm going to talk about the actual kicking of the ball, what can an effective punting game mean to this team, in your opinion?
Oh, it's everything. You have to beat the big teams. You have to have somebody who can pin an opponent back, who can make it tough. Because there's a lot of really good return men. I mean, Likely and Grant, and there's, you know, Michigan's got a couple of guys. Ohio State's got a couple of guys who are going to be big.
Yeah, King at Iowa.
King, yeah. You can go on and on. This conference has a ton of guys who could really return kicks. So and you saw it last year at Northwestern. They cost them, I mean, it was a kickoff, but it cost them. It cost them the game when Vault returned the kickoff. So you want to be able to control field position. And I read a great stat. It was Ohio State led the nation last year in difference between their average starting field position and the opponent. So you think about it. Ohio State, who's got all these weapons, are starting, you know, 10 yards further upfield than their opponents. That's one less first down the best players have to get. And, you know, it's unfair. They have Ohio State's the team that needs a punter least, and they have the best punter. But, you know, Penn State, if they can get any kind of consistency out of, you know, Gillikin or whoever is going to be out there, you know, they have to consider that a plus. I mean, they got nothing on the punter the last two seasons. And that's a position that they knew they had to.
Donnie, thanks so much. Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, 2 weeks from today, the college football season gets rolling, and 2 weeks from Saturday, Penn State gets started with Kent State at Beaver Stadium, which you'll hear right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. 2 o'clock will be the airtime. 3:30 will be the kickoff. I know Jack Hamm and I talked this morning. We're bullish on a lot of things that we're seeing right now. Now, obviously, we have to see it in games. But the two of us are bullish based on what we have observed in going to practices so far. You have to see it in the game and how it plays out. Because, obviously, you're seeing your guys go up against your guys. And there's also pluses. The pluses, every time you see a big play, I'll give you a good example. Here's a good example for you. Say, for example, McSorley's the quarterback, and he throws one to Hamilton. Hamilton makes a play, gets a lot of yardage out of it. The first thing you say is, hey, wow, look at that play. All right, great pass play. Way to go. What's the second thing you say to yourself? All right, now who blew the coverage there? How come they didn't get any pressure on him? You know, so each time there's a plus and minus on every single play when you're practicing against yourself. Now, one of the keys to me when I watch a practice that indicates that I'm watching a really good practice is when I see the defense make some plays and then I see the offense make some plays. If I see both sides of the ball making some plays and they're really good plays, then I feel like I'm watching a really good practice. If I'm seeing one side dominate the other, I don't really feel like I'm watching a really good practice because I, you know, some frustration sets in on one side and you don't feel like you're making overall team progress. I've seen enough practices now where I feel both sides have made plays throughout the course of this preseason. Both sides have been making plays. That's what you want to see. And that's why you get a better feel as to where they are as a football team moving forward.
So Saturday with the scrimmage, you'll be looking for a good handful of plays both sides. Give thumbs up.
Yeah, to a point. I mean, I'll be seeing a good handful of plays on each side, but that's not all of it. I'm going to also be watching for guys that I think are in the neighborhood of being on the varsity group versus the scout group and who might make it and who might not. Because that decision's coming up early next week. There's a certain time frame that happens. You do your installs early. You come out of your installs, and then you get into some heavy work, and you have your first scrimmage, which they've already had. Then you go out, and you go into the two-a-day stuff, which two-a-days include some heavy stuff, some walkthrough stuff, things like that. The last two-a-day is tomorrow. The next big scrimmage is coming up on Saturday. Right? Then from there, it's decision time, where the coaches now sit down, meet. I think they're meeting on Monday, because that's the first. The players don't have practice Monday. They're off because Monday's the first day of class here. That's the time for the coaches between Monday and Tuesday. And I think by Wednesday will be that's the time. I think at the end of Wednesday morning, that's when everybody in that team will know as to who's on scout team, where you can still move up. But who's going to start out the season on scout team and who's going to start out on the varsity group? There, one more tonight, two tomorrow, and then scrimmage on Saturday, work on Sunday, off day on Monday because it's the first day of classes. Then one more big one Tuesday night, and then it gets to who's what, where, and why. It's that time of the year. It's fun.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.